Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We broadcast on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this station. And the program is broadcast, if you will, live. It's streamed live at that time, as well as the podcast being made available. Gee, I wonder where those could be. Maybe at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We're also on SoundCloud and iTunes. We do have a Facebook page, and we also have Twitter, I think, you know. We'll see if we can put those to some good use somewhere down the road here. Although, it's funny, I'm hearing that both Twitter and Facebook are, they're so 2000, I don't know, 17, 16. People are not as enamored by them as they once were. And maybe it's, I don't know what the reason is. All I know is that all you have to do is tune into this broadcast or go to the podcast sites and listen to the programs, check out our guests. We link to our guests' websites so that you can get firsthand information. Don't let it be hearsay. Don't let someone tell you that, oh, you're not going to believe what I heard over here. Why don't you just go there and check it out for yourself? I know that in years gone by, when I would do research projects, if you will, on different subjects, and this wasn't even for school. Sometimes it was for work or just, you know, a personal thing. I'd want to go to the primary source information. Well, we're going to the primary source information. You're going to get an education today. I'm not sure if we're getting a master's, a PhD, or if we're just going to be honorary alumni. But we're going to get more power in our lives, but it's going to be a personal thing. That's right. This time it is personal. Personal power mastery. And my guest, Douglas Vermeeren, I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us the ultimate manual for honing, I love that word, your personal business and financial success proficiencies while eradicating, ooh, that's a big one, your limitations. Okay, let's not eradicate anything just yet. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dan, or Richard, thanks for having me here. I appreciate you having me on.
This is, I think it's going to be a lot of fun because I'm all about educating. I am a staunch supporter of education, pretty much of any kind, as long as it's doing just that, educating. Teaching people not only how to think, but giving them some information and learning how to process it. That seems to be a lost skill or art, how to process information, and also how to do the proper research and investigation into what is going on. And I'm excited to have you on the program to talk about this because we are all, Douglas, we are all looking for answers to why our lives are the way they are if we're not satisfied with them. And I would probably say, correct me if I'm wrong, that if it's not close to 100%, it ain't far behind that most people are not real satisfied with where they're at, personally, professionally, financially, relationship, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because this is not a new concept. Way back in the days of Socrates, he said that we're teleological beings, which means that we are only happy and satisfied when we're progressing. And so even if you've attained something super successful in your life, if you've, you know, got all the money, got all the cars, you've got the perfect family, you've got, you know, maybe you've even walked on the moon or climbed Mount Everest, there's still a feeling that there's more to do. And I think that that's what you're talking about, is this dissatisfaction. We're always striving to become more tomorrow than we are today.
Yeah. And that's part of, as there are going to be some folks who are going to hate this word, but that is, in many part, that's our evolutionary process. That's why we go to school. This is one of the things that has always frustrated me about people who are opposed to evolution. Is that, well, then don't send your kids to school because you're going to cause them to evolve. That's just what's,
I like that.
That's just what's going to happen. You know, I'm, you know, I think that we need to get to the root of all of this. You know, what we're talking about is a no-nonsense essential growth mastery that encourages you to make shifts in your beliefs. Ooh, now that's huge. It's, you know, and I know that we've talked about this, that on this program time and time again. Greg Braden once told us on this program, we were talking about the healing power of belief. He says, there's going to come a point in our evolution where we're not going to believe anymore. We're just going to know.
Your thoughts on that,
and how far away from that are we? Because what I find so fascinating in my 15 years early in my career working for a Christian station that was based on, faith is the evidence of things hoped for, etc. They would always want to throw up this evidence, found the wood from the Noah's Ark, and that supports the fact that my religion and my philosophy is sound and it's real and it's true. And it's like, well, then yours isn't it's not faith anymore.
As people require evidence to support their values and beliefs, we can obviously see that those aren't their true values and beliefs.
Yeah.
Here's something that I think is kind of interesting. Now, with the book that we just wrote, Personal Power Mastery, I went out and I interviewed more than 400 of the world's top achievers, like people who are at the top of their game. And so I'm talking, some of these names you'd know, everyone from Oprah Winfrey to Richard Branson to Warren Buffett to, yes, I even interviewed the current president, Donald Trump. I mean, all these people. Now, many of them had different points of view on what success was and what that looked like to them. But as we get into this idea of belief, right, I think we've got to kind of look at how people are, let's say, motivated to take action. What is it that we really have that spurs us on to become more than we are in our life? And really, it comes down to our values. Our values are what dictate and drive us to do anything. And so, the way that we kind of look at it, attaching it to this idea of belief, if you will, you've heard the saying that says, before you can have it, you have to do it. And before you do it, you have to be it. And I have to kind of give the credit to my wife, who came up with a really interesting way of looking at this. You've heard the saying that says actions speak louder than words, right? We've all heard that.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the truth is that being actually even speaks louder than actions. And that's my wife's saying, is that being speaks louder than actions. And I really like that, because if you look at, there's a lot of evidence that kind of really backs this up. But the one that I really like, it's not even from my own book, hilarious enough. It's a book called The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey, the son of Stephen Covey, the Seven Habits Covey, right? And what he kind of talks about in there is the importance of when we are being the right thing, when we really start with that essence of being. Sometimes as humans, we make mistakes with the doing. Sometimes it's not intentional, right? Sometimes we drop the ball, we think we know best, we do something, and it turns out that our actions either offend people or hurt people or cause challenges or sometimes even expensive mistakes. But when we have been the right thing from the beginning, oftentimes those mistakes are forgivable, because those that are involved in that entangled web of challenge, they know that our heart was in the right place. They know that we are in the right place. And if we're looking really at that essence of being, here's the deal, is that those who are coming from the right place, meaning that their values are at a high level and they're in harmony with, service and giving and so forth, eventually they will succeed in what they're trying, even if they fumble the ball at the beginning, because their values will lead them to really kind of find the right opportunities, the right knowledge, the right people, the right, even the right geography where to be to support those goals and dreams. And, without getting into too much detail, in the book, we call that the law of probability, that when we really know what we want, it's not a matter of writing it down, setting a date, and making a big dramatic goal-setting formula to get there, because top achievers don't even do that, right? Like this idea of this write it down, set a date, I never saw it once among the 400 top achievers. They've got a different way to do it. But this idea of the law of probability, when we know what we value and we're very specific, in fact, here's an interesting way to look at it. A goal that's specific and clear becomes attainable and near, right? When we're clear enough to get where we're going and it's in harmony with our values, every step we take towards that goal increases the probability that it will occur. So when we go out and we meet the right people that will help us open the right doors, when we gain the right knowledge to help us to know what to do and how to do it, when we go to the right places geographically speaking, meaning that, if you wanted to be a movie star, sitting on your couch watching TV is definitely less effective than going to Los Angeles, for example, right? Mm-hmm. There are things that we can do that will increase the probability that our goal will arrive and the things that we value will arrive. The problem is that I think a lot of people are trying to achieve things that are not in harmony with their truest values. And so, they put themselves out there saying they want to be this or that or create, this level of abundance for this reason. But when they get out into the world, because these things aren't in harmony with their values, they can't stay either motivated or focused long enough to achieve results there, right? Like everything is going to tie right back to our values. What we value is what we create.
You know, you raise so many different wonderful aspects to this. And it's interesting the things that come to mind as we're conversing. I read a book some years ago. It just so happens it was an audio book. We're going back to maybe the late 80s, early 90s. It was a book called, and you may be familiar with it, a book called The Goal by Goldratt, an Israeli. Okay. I don't know if you're familiar with the book or not.
I haven't read it, but I'm aware of it.
Yeah. And it was very interesting the way that he put things together in this particular work. But you sort of alluded to some certain aspects, I think, that he spoke about in his work. But it's been, as you said before, has been spoken about, well, for centuries, for millennia, in a manner of speaking. One of the things that we talk about on this program is finding one's purpose, which goes to that issue of the values that you were talking about. That our actions or our life is not congruent with our core values. I'm trying to think of the analogy here. It was an M&M, and you had, of course, the peanut in the center. You had the chocolate coating, and then you had the outer candy shell. Now, the peanut in the center were your core values, stands to reason. And then you had your beliefs wrapped around that, and then you had your actions wrapped around that, or maybe it was the beliefs on the outside and so forth. But be that as it may, sometimes they just were incongruent. There were those incongruencies.
Well, it's interesting because, again, after visiting with 400 of the world's top achievers, you know, there is something really interesting that is very different than what most people are teaching and sharing.
Okay.
And the problem with this idea of our values are wrapped up inside a peanut or whatever we want to say is that you're actually very self-centered at that point. And you can never, ever create success if you're standing in a corner, isolated and by yourself. All success that's ever been created in human history has been through the involvement of others and as a community. In fact, even if you believe in evolution, like what you were talking about at the beginning, our survival as a species has come because we've been able to learn how to work together and cooperate. So one of the things that I have noticed as we, you know, spent this time with the top achievers is that they are never sort of isolated in their passion and their purpose. And I know that so many gurus are out there saying, if you want to become successful, find your passion, find your purpose, and then move forward. Well, here's the problem is if you want to be on purpose, your purpose must include others. You can't start a business. I think it's kind of interesting how Warren Buffett said. He says, what you love about you is your hobby. What others love about you is your business. And so your passion, your purpose, if they're going to be valuable in our society, if you're going to receive success and fulfillment, they need to actually take into consideration other people, or you're just simply a taker.
Mm-hmm.
So my question would be, if you really want to become successful and feel self-fulfilled, to find meaning in your life, you need to make sure that you're meaningful to other people in some way. And I'm not saying that your validation will come from an external source, but you're now creating legacy and contribution, which allows you to feel as though you've got self-worth. So what I always tell my students is when you've identified your purpose and your passion on your side of the fence, now let's find out how they can be passionate and purposeful to other people. So in other words, if you are running a business, how is it that you actually have or fulfill some element of someone else's purpose? Because the more that you can fulfill someone else's purpose, the more you're going to find that there's going to be abundance and value in everything that you do. You know, no success was ever created in a corner. If you think about it, even Sir Edmund Hillary, who got credit for climbing Mount Everest as the first man that was there, he had people carrying his stuff. Right? Like there were people pulling his gear and stuff up the mountain. If you look at Neil Armstrong, first guy on the moon, well, there were guys back in Houston controlling half of the technology that got him there. So we've got to be very, very careful that if we try to just fly solo in life, we're going to really not get to the heights that we want. Neither will our self-worth or self-esteem eventually be justified. Selfish people eventually find themselves alone, broken, in despair. So our passion and purpose need to be connected to others.
So I could kind of sum it up as I've sort of tried to live my life in my career in particular, if you were, say, a client who wanted me to do some production for you, whether it be an audible book or a commercial or a radio program or a demo or a podcast, I want you, Douglas, to be successful, because if you're successful, then I'm successful.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess another thing that was really kind of interesting as we observed the top achievers, and some of these people, granted, did it better than others, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't look at, let's just take the idea of finances and abundance, because I think that's the easiest to measure, right? Like, we can't always measure emotional content, but we can definitely see someone's bank statement and see where they're at, right? So we can measure that. If we look at top achievers, they looked at the world as not a pie, give me, you know, a piece of the pie, so to speak. They actually recognize it as a tree. And, you know, it's, I have to kind of give credit to Myron Golden, one of my friends here, for sharing this analogy. He says that if I were to pull an apple off of a tree and eat it, sure, there maybe were 12 apples out, now there's 11. But the thing that an abundant person realizes is that the apple that he just pulled off the tree has seeds in it. And so as he plants those seeds and as he begins to succeed, all of a sudden he gives more. So he uses an analogy in one of his books where he shares that when I owned a $50 car, when I was broke, I never took it to get washed. I never took it to get serviced. It was my car and I didn't have the money to do those things. But then when he moved on to buy a $60,000 or an $80,000 car, now he regularly gets it oil changed. He regularly has it cleaned. He regularly has it taken care of. And so there's now more people involved in that economy. And so more people are blessed through that, right? And so top achievers, the people that are really succeeding in life, include other people in their economy. And as a result, that grows. In fact, I wish we had a kind of a diagram to show this. It would be awesome. But we found that there were really five pillars in everyone's success. And everyone, like when we went out and we asked them what their goals were, and I still do this even with my students, what are your goals? I have them write them down. They always fall into one of these five categories. And that's self is the first one. And it's important that you get these in order. Self, which includes self-worth, self-confidence, feelings of self-fulfillment. The second is what we call spirituality. Now, why is it second? Well, it's because if a person can't truly love themselves and believe who they are in their own divinity and their own power, they can't move on to connecting with spirituality. They just won't, right? But mm-hmm. when we connect with spirituality, then the next thing that we look at is the goals of health. And I'm not just talking about physical health. I'm talking about everything from mental health to physical health to, you know, this can even include things like quit smoking, lose weight. You know, we take care of ourselves when we really recognize that we are connected to ourself in a spiritual way and our self-fulfillment. The next is what we call relationships. And relationships are very important. It doesn't just mean our, you know, connection to a significant other or a spouse. It actually means all relationships, including even those within our community, those in our culture and our, you know, country and so on. And then lastly is abundance. And one of the things that a lot of people try and do is they try and shortcut from, for example, self-fulfillment directly to a good relationship or self-fulfillment to abundance or what have you. And we've seen people who, for example, they were kind of a phony baloney when they were out there dating somebody and all of a sudden they're married to them, but that's not really who they were along the way, right? Mm. Or people who have tried to, again, shortcut the abundance path. They've done something to get the money, but they haven't really been ethical or fair in it, and so they pay the price. So we've got to go through that circle of connecting to all of those elements before we arrive at those final goals. That's why this idea of we've got to be it before we do it, before we can have it, is so important. And kind of going with this idea now about back to the apples that we started with, what most people don't realize, and a lot of people have abundance as a goal, right? And I'm just not just talking money, I'm talking abundance of opportunity, abundance mm-hmm. of time, abundance of freedom, all these things. What we don't often recognize is that they come through relationships, right? If money is going to arrive in your hand, it's going to come through someone else. And so we have to understand that as we go through this cycle and this wheel, we must nurture every part of that wheel in order to be fully abundant and have it be sustainable, right? And so I think that that's just an important thing that I think a lot of people overlook, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I the other aspect of it, too, and you sort of alluded to this earlier in the program, and that is that a lot of people, they're looking for all of these things, abundance, whether it's money or opportunity or whatever the case might be, whatever it is in the category of abundance and prosperity that they're looking for. And one of the things that I remember sharing with one of my other guests many years ago after The Secret had come out, and I'd done an interview with people about it, but then I was talking with this other person and they said, well, you know, they left something out. Now, wasn't it necessarily intentional? Maybe it was. And that is that the law of attraction, great thing, wonderful, neat idea, but it doesn't take into consideration what your life's purpose is. Whatever that may be, it doesn't take into consideration whether or not that which you want, and it could be something that you want is more ego-based, if you will, than it is, you know, purpose-based, could do you more harm than good.
Interesting.
And so until we get focused on what it is that we really want or what we should really be doing in our lives, and I've even sort of jokingly said, well, you know, if you badger the universe long enough, whether it's for your highest good or not, it'll give it to you. All right, enough already. Here, have it. You know, deal with it. You know, you're going to deal with the unintended consequences kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's,
I think that
you say that because all the gang from The Secret are my friends, and I've actually produced 3 of the top 10 personal development movies after The Secret.
So yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that as well.
Yeah, we've had everybody from Bob Proctor, who's one of my best friends, to John DeMartini, who is my best friend, to, you know, people like Bob Doyle and mm-hmm. Marcy Shymoff, Marie Diamond. Like, we've had the whole gang. They're all buddies of mine. And it's interesting to kind of hear that idea about life purpose, because I think that like, let's face it, The Secret was a brilliant movie, but it was the beginning of a conversation.
Sure, absolutely.
And so it's very difficult to kind of share this idea of life purpose or exploring that, because, you know, it was really about attraction versus purpose. And I think those are 2 different subjects. And one of the things that I really like, just kind of, you know, as you were talking, I had this crazy idea come into my mind, and I started thinking about some of the sources that I've, you know, read and backed it up. I had one quote come into my mind from Stephen Covey again. Wow, we're all about the Coveys today. but this is the original Covey, Stephen Covey, 7 Habits Covey. He said, the problem with most people is they climb the ladder of success only to find it was leaning against the wrong wall. and that's definitely true.
Yeah.
And I find that when we're kind of working with our students with Personal Power Mastery, which right now, like, we're very grateful, we're rated the number 3 program in the world for personal development. And I think that's really not because of me, it's because of the top achievers we interviewed. We got the real stuff here, right? But one of the things that I found is that most people talk about goal setting and they say, okay, just put it out what you want, write a list, all these things. But the truth of the matter is there's 2 components. You need to look at the specifics of what you want, but you do need to look at how you feel about what you want in terms of legacy, right? Like, what are you really creating here? And one of the things that I think is important that we teach our students is the definition of happiness. And what's that? Well, happiness is to have peace with the choices and the consequences that you're making.
Mm.
Now, you're creating both choices and consequences. And the problem is, like you said, with The Secret, I get it. You know, it kind of almost seemed like a gold rush, right? Whatever you want, you can have. If you, you know, think about it, dream about it, meditate on it, have feelings about it, it's going to show up. Mm-hmm. Well, let me share with you kind of a funny true story that happened to me. There's one of our clients that, you know, he saw the movie The Secret. This is way back in 2006 when it first came out. And he says, I just saw this great movie. What do you think about it? I'm going to try and manifest something. And so I said to him, okay, well, what is it going to be that you're going to manifest? He says, well, I'd like to manifest a Ferrari. Let's just see if this really works. And so anyways, needless to say, at this conversation, we just kind of parted ways. And I was, you know, kind of, I forgot about it. Anyways, about 6 months to maybe 8 months later, he gives me this call and he says, I want to meet with you for lunch. And so I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Let's see what happened, right? So I get in my vehicle. I head down to this restaurant we're going to meet at, and I'm looking through the parking lot looking for a Ferrari. Let's see, where is this thing, right? And I can't see it. I look, you know, again, the downstairs parking lot. There's nothing there. Okay, so I come into the restaurant, and there he is sitting at this table with this girl. And I don't know who she is. But as I sit down, he hands across a business card, and he says, I'll bet you're wondering about that Ferrari. Well, I reach down, and I grab the business card, and he goes, I'd like you to meet my new personal assistant. Her name is Adriana Ferrari. and we both had a laugh, but then it came back to this idea that I think a lot of people, they say they know what they want,
mm-hmm.
but again, it's not in harmony with their values, firstly, which his value obviously wasn't the car. His value was in finding someone to help him grow his business. And also it wasn't specific and clear enough,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, he wasn't specific and clear about what he wanted. And so one of the things that I think is really important is we do talk about the law of attraction. I get it. But until you really are specific and clear, in fact, I even tell people, you know, that are building a vision board, I mean, it's not enough to just cut out pictures of the house you want or the car you want or all these. You need to get very specific on that vision board and even write down, you know, the reasons why you want this thing. We are, you know, everybody talks about why. I get it. But also, I believe that you need to start putting specifics. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, if it is a Ferrari that you want, how much is it going to cost? And by the way, some of these things I think are really important, because if you write them down, when the opportunity comes, you'll know if you're sitting on a good deal or a good opportunity or what have you. In fact, I know we're probably going a little longer on this question that you like, but I want to share something valuable.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really known for is helping people create a lot of wealth in a hurry. In fact, after I interviewed the top 400 achievers as a 19-year-old, I did $1.6 million in 6 months right after that, which is about $9,000 a day. So you can imagine people are knocking on my door all the time saying, how do I make a lot of money? Well, here's the deal. When we talk about financial freedom in our seminars, I ask people, tell me what financial freedom looks like to you. And of course, we get people who, you know, they give me these wonderful emotional experiences. I can do what I want. I can be where I want. I can give to my family. I can buy the house of my dreams. And there's all these things that they share. But the truth of the matter is it's not specific. Your financial freedom is actually a number. So if you look at, you know, how much your outgoing is every month in terms of maybe you're paying a mortgage, maybe you've got utilities, maybe you've got a grocery bill, maybe you've got car payments, maybe you've got insurance. As soon as you can itemize all those numbers that you are obligated to pay every month, that's your financial freedom number. And when you can create that residually, you're now financially free. And by the way, there's four stages of financial, how should we say, financial levels, you know, everything from financial insecurity to financial security, financial freedom, and financial abundance. The one people want is financial abundance. But again, on your vision board, no one really has ever put a number there of what that looks like. And so I'm a very firm believer that those two things, that being specific and clear, and secondly, how you feel about it, are the most important questions that you really need to answer, because you'll never have a connection to a true value until you really identify how you feel about it. And you'll never be able to get started on it until you know what it is specifically you want to do. It's kind of like that saying that says the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single footstep, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a load of crap. And the reason why I say that is because unless you know where you're going, you are just literally taking a journey of 1,000 miles in the middle of some desert. You're going to be lost forever. That question or that statement, if I were to be the fortune cookie writer, I would say the journey to where you want to go begins with a single footstep in the right direction. And you can never know what that right direction is until you have clarity around what the destination is. And that's the problem with most people. They just don't know, right?
Yeah.
My rant for the morning.
No. That's absolutely not a problem at all. Matter of fact, you know, when you mention that about financial abundance and how it's a number, yes, I could sit here and do that. But I've been carrying around in my wallet. When you mentioned that, and that it's a number, I remember a book that I had read, and it actually had a blank check that was printed in it. And so I put it on my computer and I set it up and I created it. And this is something that I put together. And it's a small little thing. I mean, it's smaller than a business card because I needed it to fit in my wallet. And it's actually dated 11/24/2007. And the dollar amount on it is $5 million. Well, I don't have $5 million. Didn't then and haven't since. But I still, for some reason, I'm still carrying this silly little check in my wallet to this day. And I've often thought about that. There was a wonderful story that I heard. I wanted to quickly share this with you before we go to break. And it's a brief story. This is two guys. They get together every so often. You know, they're good friends. And they meet one day for breakfast. They're sitting there chatting, having a great time. The bill comes. Bob, we'll call him Bob, he gets the check and he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out exact amount for the bill plus a gratuity, and they leave. They go on their way. No, there was no thought about that. A few days later, they meet for lunch. Same scenario. Get the bill. Bob pays the bill, reaches in his pocket, pulls out exactly the right amount plus gratuity, and they go on their way. Well, Phil, the other fella, is kind of curious. Well, they go to dinner a few weeks later, exactly the same scenario. Pulls out of the exact change plus gratuity, pays the bill, and Phil's just going, what the heck is up with this, you know? So he says, Bob, what's going on here? You always seem to have exactly the right amount every time we go out to eat. He says, well, I found this this bottle, and I rubbed it, and this genie came out and gave me one wish. You could have whatever you want. And he says, well, can I get back to you in the next couple of days? He said, no problem. So he thought about it. I could wish for $1 million, a yacht, all these different things that I could wish for. He says, he finally came back to the genie a few days later. He says, okay, I have my wish. I wish to have exactly what I need whenever I need it to get the things that I want. So he didn't necessarily have a full bank account, but he always had whatever he needed to support his dreams, his desires, et cetera, et cetera. Granted, we don't have a genie to grant us that wish. But what about that kind of perspective on abundance and or prosperity, to where we just are trusting that the universe is going to provide for us as we go? Because even from a philosophical standpoint, in the Gospel of, I think it was Matthew, Jesus is quoted as saying that, hey, look at the birds flying through the air. You notice that they're taken care of, they're fed, and they don't work. They don't work 9 to 5, punch a clock and go home and what have you. They don't worry about where they're going to sleep or what they're going to have to eat or what they're going to wear. Why are you people, human beings, created by God, worried about this stuff? When the birds are taken care of, you will be taken care of too.
Yeah. And elsewhere, though, he talked about the importance of having an abundant life. You see,
yeah,
certainly I agree with Jesus there. But one thing I definitely kind of disagree with your genie story, mm-hmm. is that person is only taking care of themselves.
True.
Right. And I think that that's something that, you know, when a person is truly abundant, they have the ability to create, how should we say, legacy, which lifts others, including their own family, right? So this is why I believe abundance to the point of overflowing is much more than just opening your wallet and having the exact amount. And I know that you've got to go to break soon, so I don't want to go into something really big here. But one of the things that I think is worth talking about, you've got this $5 million check in your pocket. I can tell you exactly why it's not turned into $5 million from there. And one of the big things is that I see people doing is, again, back to this law of probability. Who have you been meeting on a regular basis that can help you get there? What opportunities have you been participating in? What knowledge have you been gaining? And like I said, what geographical locations have you been going to? Just to give you an idea, you know, one of the things that I learned very early when I was a 19-year-old doing these interviews with the top achievers is to have a regular mentor who can help you to get there. And even today, like, I mean, not like today, but every Friday, that's mm-hmm. actually more accurate. Every Friday I do lunch with one of my mentors who's worth about $700 million. And so it's funny because he buys lunch. Thank you. But but I meet with him and he actually shares with me strategies on things I can be doing to be growing my life and my business. And it has made me a fortune. Now, I want to share that there's another thing that I think is really important about this visit that we do is I actually keep a notebook. And if we were here actually on a video, I could show you that I've even got it in my hand right now. I carry a black notebook with me everywhere I go. And so what happens is, like Harvard said, that they did a study and they said that every single year there is a, you know, every person has an average of 6 ideas that could go to $1 million. Now, I believe that most people have even more than that. In fact, I know entrepreneurs that have that every hour, right? But what I do to stay focused, which is an important thing when it comes to building wealth, because it's like a magnifying glass, right? You can't burn a hole into, you know, 10 different holes if you're focused on, you know, doing them all at once, right? Or mm-hmm. or maybe a better analogy is everybody's got a room full of plants and one glass of water. If you try to water them all, they're all going to die. But if you pick one or maybe two, you'll do all right. And then when those are living, then you can add others, right? The problem with most people is they try to do too many things. And maybe me too. So what I have done in this notebook is every week when I have ideas that I want to implement in my business or things that I want to do, I make a note of them. And then when I meet with my mentor, I actually get advice from him as far as which ones are the easiest low-hanging fruit to implement, which are the ones that could be most profitable. And I take a look at which ones have my involvement and which ones have me out. So in other words, like in my office, I also have this where I put the opportunities on the wall. We actually do it on the wall where it says me in, me out. Opportunities that require less of my time and less of my effort but produce better results are obviously better suited to me. But there are some opportunities that, again, I'm excited about or they're in line with my passion. They're easier for me to do because of my skill set. Sometimes those move to the forefront. And so one of the big things, I guess, you know, making this long and short, what I'm trying to say is you need to record every money-making idea that you could have. Then you need someone to support you in sorting out which ones are going to be the best return on effort for you. Mm-hmm. And then you need to get to work. And, you know, some of these may take time. Some of them may not. They say right now that the average millionaire used to be created in 2 years, but most of the time that was an asset millionaire created through real estate. But now the average millionaire is created in 6 to 8 months and it's generally done online with a business. And so you've got to look, if that's not one of your skill sets, that's okay. You can still create wealth, but you need to be looking at one of the other 4 areas, you know, and the 4 areas where money is always made is either business, real estate, investment, or your intellectual property. And so if you can select one of those that you're more inclined with and then get a mentor to help you in those areas, success is inevitable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll leave it at that because I know you're probably itching to get to your brain, right? I don't want to throw the whole train off the tracks
here. No. We're doing just fine in that regard. I appreciate that. I want to continue on that line when we get back from break. Douglas Vermeeren is my guest. Personal Power Mastery website that we can send people to. What would that be?
Yeah, I would say probably the best one, and I don't know if you've got the ability to put this in the show notes, but my own personal website, douglasvermeeren.com. But you can also get us over to, the personalpowermastery.co. That will be another place that you could go that would give them information on that. And just also let you know, I've got a ton of free resources on, social media and stuff. So even if you wanted to come join us at Personal Power Mastery on Facebook as a Facebook group, I've got free stuff we're putting up there all the time. Obviously, if you like us and you get our vibe, become our tribe, and then we'll see how we can help you from there and build some really cool stuff.
That's kind of what we tell people when it comes to the information. We lay out this smorgasbord. We ask you to come and take what resonates with you. Do not touch what doesn't, but come back. Maybe it will later. And so we encourage people to go to your website, douglasvermeeren.com, and check out more about not only Personal Power Mastery, but all of the other stuff that you have available for you. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. And we're going to be back in just a moment. So please don't go away.
Tell me your stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I am Richard Dugan, your host, here with Douglas Vermeeren. He's got a book and a website and all the good stuff that will help you to move forward in your life. Personal Power Mastery, the website, personalpowermastery.co. And then we also have his website, douglasvermeeren.com. And I would venture that that is connected in one way or another to the CO website as well. So you will not have any trouble navigating around. And it's interesting, you talk about how you have all these wonderful things available to our listeners, and I don't know, we're all trying to figure all this stuff out. We're all working together, and you're here to help us to do that, because you've discovered some things that have worked really well for 400 other guys and gals, and you've incorporated them into your life, and now you're sharing that with us. And obviously, you've adopted that philosophy that if we're successful, then you, Douglas, are successful. And I have to say that it's real interesting how in the early days of my career, I would take on these little projects by these pastors and ministers that would come to me at this religious station, this Christian station, and they'd want me to do these projects for them. And of course, they said, what do you charge? And my philosophy back then was, I would rather charge them a smaller amount, knowing that they can't really afford much. And that's just my own theorizing that they couldn't afford much because they were, with small churches, small congregations, than not do the work at all. And that I wanted them to have the opportunity to get their message out so that people would then be able to make up their own minds. That's always that was always at the forefront of my thinking when I would take on these projects. And then people who knew me, who I worked with, saying, you're underselling yourself. You should be charging more. And I would go back to that. I say, well, yeah, but if I charge what I want to charge, I wouldn't get the projects. I wouldn't get the experience. I wouldn't get the contact. And they wouldn't get their message out so that people could make up their own minds as to whether or not this person and their message was worth listening to or following. And I stand by that. I mean, I honestly, that's really how I felt. And recently, I produced this audiobook at a going rate, a rate that I chose, and they didn't. That was the first time I ever charged a particular rate. I cringed, going, "Ooh, they're gonna say no." And they said, "Okay, sure." It shocked the heck out of me that they were willing to pay $25 an hour back when I was charging $25 an hour. But I just produced an audiobook for a woman, a children's book, and she loved it, and it was great. And I put it in my car, put the CDs in my car, and I'm listening to the thing, and tears are in my eyes. I'm going, wow. I was amazed, and again, I say this with all due humility, I was amazed at how good it sounded. I'm going, wow, I did that? Wow, that's pretty cool. And it was so much fun to do, too, because I got to work. She's like grandma reading to the kids. That's what it sounded like. It was very, very cool. But when we get into situations like in relationships, how do we incorporate some of these principles into our relationships to make them? I don't know if a relationship is necessarily supposed to be successful, but you know, so that we can be happy in the definition that you described earlier about being happy.
It's interesting because as I looked at the top 400 achievers, it was very interesting for me. And by the way, the criteria that I kind of used had changed actually over the period of time. Like at first, when I looked at who was a top achiever, I kind of set a standard for either they'd have to have achieved some sort of financial success, business success, or, you know, we included in there athletes and celebrities and things of that nature. And so, to be quite frank, when I looked at relationships with some of them, not all of them had super great relationships. And I think it's maybe the easiest way to describe it is, you know, everyone is wealthy to some extent, but our wealth appears in the ways that we value most. And so for some of these people, they didn't have the financial success, but they had the relationship success. And with other people, they had, for example, the success in a physical aspect, meaning that they'd, you know, won a gold medal or they'd, you know, achieved a high level of physical recognition for some sport that they were involved in, but they didn't have the financial success. Now, there were people, of course, that had balance and had success in pretty much all of those areas. But it was a very conscious decision. And the thing that was interesting is that every one of those people who had success in those areas, they were clear on what they wanted firstly, and then they were willing to put in the effort and the work, which meant that sometimes it meant putting themselves and the things that they were, you know, maybe kind of looking for on a beginning level, I guess, came secondary. In other words, relationships and even the financial abundance and so forth, all of these things often came by seeking the best of someone else. It's kind of almost like what Zig Ziglar had said, right? Like, mm-hmm. If you want to get something in life, you've got to help enough other people get what they want first. And so I think that that's kind of important. And I guess one of the ways I like to explain this, maybe the easiest way, is you've heard this idea that a lot of gurus say that to become successful, you need to pay yourself first, right? Like, if you want to become financially affluent, pay yourself first. And that's only partly true. The analogy that I like to use is, imagine if you were on the Titanic. You guys have just hit the iceberg. Oh no, right? Now, you've got your family with you and everybody else, and you've got to make some choices of who you're going to put in the lifeboat. If you pay yourself first, that's you getting into the lifeboat first and telling everyone else, well, good luck. We hope it works out for you. And the truth of the matter is that's not a great way to build relationships. That's not a great way to build wealth. It's not a great way to build anything. And so what I would suggest is how you pay yourself first is when you've got that lifeboat, you recognize what your truest values are and your most important things are. So how you pay yourself first is first you put in to the lifeboat the things that are most precious to you. That's how you're paying yourself first. And I'm not suggesting everyone's lifeboat is going to look like mine, but the way mine looks like is my wife, children, and grandchildren going first. Then even before me, I put what I call the golden goose, which are, you know, business things that I have that are producing for our survival, things that are important, even people that help those things run, including my customers. And then after I've got everybody safely on board, then I'm going to get in. Because if we wind up on some deserted island somewhere, you want to have the guy who knows how to survive as part of your boat, right? Mm-hmm. You want to have him in there. And so this idea of paying yourself first, I think most people have it misunderstood. They think that means put all the money in your pocket. But I'm going to suggest paying yourself first really means taking care of first things first. And that allows you to continue the journey. I guess another way to say it is you've heard the saying that says nice guys finish last. Mm. I'm here to tell you that nice guys not only get to finish, but they get to do it again. It's the guys that are selfish and greedy who might finish first the first time, but you never, ever get permission to come back, right? And so you want to build that life that takes care of the right things in the right sequence. You need to understand what your priorities are, and you need to match them to the things that you value most so that you can retain and keep the things that you value most. You know, obviously, we've all heard this idea of when someone's on their deathbed, nobody ever brings up their bank statement, right? Nobody really talks about some of these worldly accolades. but all the things that are high value to them and most important, those are the things that we think about on our deathbed. And so we really need to understand when building this lifeboat in life by paying ourselves first. Paying doesn't mean just cash. It means prioritizing correctly. And I think that's the big lesson that I learned from the top achievers. We get what we decide we want. And, you know, before we can expand what we have in life, we need to expand who we are, which really means tapping into what we value.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because when you mentioned this aspect of what we think about on our deathbed, and this has flashed into my mind on more than one program, and I find this really rather profound. There was a statement made by a gentleman right before his passing. This is the quote that was attributed to him just before his passing. Four simple words. So much wasted time. Mm. David Cassidy.
Sure.
And I was a kid watching him and the Partridge Family on TV. That was the very first record album I ever bought and so forth as a kid. And I heard that and I'm going, wow, you did so much in your life. Yeah, you had some problems, like, you know, we all do. You have challenges. But, wow, you got to be on a TV show and make music and all of these kinds of things. And yet still, here's this guy who has this regret of, so much wasted time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've often said this on this program, then, and God forbid it should happen. But if I were to go immediately following this interview, I'm good. I'm good. I've done all I can do. I've done the very best with the life I've been given. I've had some opportunities I didn't think I was going to get. I've been to Ireland twice. I never thought I was going to leave the continental United States. You know, many of my friends, they've been down to Mexico for spring break. I never went to Mexico and all of these kinds of things. And I'm, you know, from that standpoint, I'm good. Did I make that $5 million? No, but you know what? It's okay. I'm living in Santa Barbara, California. They say, my God, if you're living there, geez, you must be living right to be able to afford to live there and stay for, I've been here 12 and a half years. You know, I suppose some might say, well, that's a millionaire's life, you know, on a beer salary, you know, kind of thing. But I'm near one of the things, the priorities for me, that was being by the water, by the ocean. But it wasn't, I didn't plan to be here. It just happened that I connected up with a woman who was a Santa Barbara native. And the next thing I knew, we were moving here. So I'm wondering about the aspect of gratitude when it comes to all of this, when it comes to this whole aspect of, and I'm going to stick with the word abundance, because I know prosperity, immediately you see the dollar sign. But what about that in regards to this whole aspect of abundance and drawing to you not just the cash and the things, but also those experiences, the relationships and opportunities?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, opportunity is really always a reflection of where we place ourselves, who we associate with, the mm-hmm. places we go, and naturally what we value. I think a lot of people are surrounded by opportunities to get what they claim they value, but they don't see them because, again, they're not really in harmony with their truest values. What's the easiest way to explain this? You know, what we really value, we're willing to sacrifice for. Kind of reminds me of a Chinese proverb that I heard once. And I apologize, I'm probably not going to get this totally right, but there was a monk who had three monk students, right? Three junior monks who were with him. And he asked them the question. He says, well, what is courage? And the first monk said, well, you know, it's when I'm willing to fight for someone who is underprivileged or, you know, someone who is under duress. And, you know, the senior monk kind of nodded his head and said, well, that's great. The next monk, he said, well, you know, to you, what is courage? And he says, well, it's willing to, you know, stand firm in the face of any danger that's there. And, you know, I'll stand for a cause or, you know, something that I believe in. And, well, the senior monk kind of nodded his head and he says, well, that's right. That's a good idea. not 100% accurate, but good idea. Then he said to the final monk, well, what's the definition of courage? And this monk said, well, it's to stand for an ideal, a truth, or a belief, something that I have as a conviction, and to stand in face of all these things. Well, you know, it's interesting. The head monk, again, nodded his head and didn't give an answer. So all three of these monks were very confused, and they said to him, well, what is courage? And the head monk simply replied, courage is love. And then he pointed out with the first monk that you will not stand for someone underprivileged or someone that is in duress unless you have love for them. You know, I think a lot of our listeners can relate. Like for me, I would step in front of a bus for any of my kids, my wife or my grandkids, right? I love them so much that courage is automatic. Yeah. He then turned to the second and he said, in the face of danger, whether it be turmoil or catastrophe or whatever it is, he says, you won't really step up unless you're defending against something that you love, whether it's a property or a place or a duty or whatever it is. You won't consider it a duty unless it's something that you love for, right? And then to the final one, he said, for an ideal, he said, you won't stand up for an idea unless you love it, unless you embrace it. So courage technically is love. So any of these ideas with opportunity, I think that the problem is that most people have never, ever taken the time to investigate, again, back to this idea of values, what they truly care about in order to discover opportunities appearing. They just, they don't see it, right?
Yeah, it's like not seeing the forest for the trees, in a manner of speaking.
Well, it's interesting because there was a story, and again, I'm paraphrasing it. I apologize, I can't get it right, but there was a story that about Walt Disney, that you know, Walt Disney came out there to Florida and he saw where Disney World was going to be built, and of course they built it, but he passed away before it was opened, the inaugural day. And there was a reporter that approached his brother Roy and said, "Well, you know, it's just too bad with all of this here that Roy, or that, you know, Walt was not around to see it, that he died before he could see it." And Roy cut the reporter off and he said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "Had Walt not seen this already, you never would have got a chance to see it at all." And I think that that's true about opportunity, yeah. Is that, you know, people don't really see it clear enough to create it. Yeah. And that's an important element to think about.
You know, I've used the phrase several times during the program about choices. We give people choices and knowledge of those choices. And that's a great thing that we have those choices. But I use the analogy of going to a restaurant. I don't want to go to a restaurant that has 15 pages in the menu, because to me, this sounds like one of the reasons why people, their dreams, their vision doesn't come to pass, is because maybe they're distracted by too many choices. They haven't been able to settle on one, and so they don't settle on anything because there's just too much. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that this is actually my favorite question that you've asked so far, just because I love this idea of choice. And there's two thoughts on it. First, I'm going to suggest that, yeah, most entrepreneurs have what we call ADD-HD, which is ADD in high definition. Like, these guys are like way ADD, right? And I'm part of that group. So, you know, I'll be honest with you. That's where things like this notebook really help. And so, yes, there are some people who are overloaded by choices, and you've got to find strategies that are going to allow you to distill what it is that you really want to gain out of life. What is it that you really, really want? And there's a lot of directions you could go. And if you're going to try, like I said, to water every plant in the room and you've only got one glass of water, things are not going to be produced. You're going to always be sort of in that struggle mode. So there comes a time when you need to make decisions based on the choices you're facing. But now here's something interesting. When I went out and I interviewed the 400 top achievers, one of the things that I did look for, and it wasn't always multimillionaires and billionaires that I interviewed, sometimes it was people that I felt just created some amazing results in our human experience. And one of the people that I interviewed, in fact, one of the things I was looking for is, who are the people on the forefront of human change? In other words, if someone has to change behavior or mindset, who are the people who are creating those changes instantly? Now, this is going to sound a little bit crazy because I don't know of any success book that's ever interviewed someone like this, but I interviewed the people who train the folks on the suicide hotline. Now, if anywhere in the world there is a quick change that needs to happen, it's the suicide hotlines, where somebody comes in, they're discouraged, they are in despair, they're totally frustrated, and they feel like the only option that they have is to take their life. Mm. And so to get on the phone with somebody who can shift you from that kind of feeling to now willing to give it another try, to me, that was somebody I needed to interview. So let me share with you kind of something that I think is important here. is when I was asking one of these ladies, I said, tell me a little bit about how you guys are trained to be able to support this kind of change. And it was so interesting. The first thing she said is, she goes, well, out of all the things that we can tell someone that calls into the suicide hotline, the only thing we can't tell them, we cannot tell them, don't kill yourself. I was like, what? Like, that would be the first thing that I would say, right? Mm. And I said, well, why is that? That's such a peculiar thing. And she says, well, here's the deal, is that those people already come to the table feeling like they have no choices. They're in a corner. The only choice they have is to take themselves. There are no other option. And if I tell them don't kill themselves, I'm not empowering that person. I've not given them any choice. I've not given them any options. In fact, I've, you know, told them again what to do, which is probably what they're feeling like, that everything in life is telling them what to do. And she says, instead of telling them not to kill themselves, he says, we help them to see the power of choice, that they do have choices right now. And we also help them to see the consequences of those choices.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting to me that as I have worked with now students in our Personal Power Mastery seminar program, which, like I said, is now rated the third top personal development program in the world, we have recognized people come through who have been through bankruptcies, through foreclosures, through divorces, facing terminal illness. They've lost loved ones, including children. They've had, you know, all kinds of difficulties. In fact, you know, people who've even had their spouse unfaithful to them, or people who have been in the despair of a drug addiction, or whatever it could be. What we have found is that all of these people, when they're in these dire circumstances, the best way for them to regain their power, the best way for them to change their thinking, is to recognize that they have choice. And one of the exercises that we do in the seminar, which I think is absolutely important, is we have the participants pick an issue that they're struggling with, somewhere where they feel hopeless or helpless, whether it's in their finances or in their relationships or in their connection to their self or their feelings of self-worth or whatever it could be. And we have them just sit down and literally write down 25 to 50 new choices that they could make regarding that issue. Now, I'm not suggesting that they're going to take that path, right? Like, this comes back to your first comment about overload. I don't want them to be overloaded, but I want them to see that they have some power in the situation. And the more choices that we can recognize that we have, whether we take them or not, the more we recognize that we have options, and options equal power. And it's been amazing to see. I've seen people who've, in fact, you know, even actually one of my favorites of this is there was a couple that came in that were thinking that their only option was divorce. They just had a really hard time getting along with each other, and there were some other difficulties in terms of finances and things that had made things tough. They did this exercise as a couple, and they wrote down all the different choices that they had. And what was interesting is that also brought them together. They began to see that both had a vested interest in making the relationship work. And as they listed the choices that were there, they found a handful of choices that, in fact, were better options than divorce. And even to this day, this is about 4 years later, they are still together, and they now use this exercise as a regular part of sustaining their relationship. What choices do we have available to us that are better than the worst options? Yeah. And like I said, the more choices that we recognize we have, the more power we have. And you don't have to take all the choices.
No.
Right? Pick the best ones.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's part of what I write about in my book, in my little book called Choices, that cool. stems from an experience back in 2001 when my second wife, present wife, was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. And I had been following a lot of self-help and personal growth kinds of programs. I'd been interviewing authors such as yourself for years prior. And one of the thoughts that came to mind was, I need to give her something to focus on. I need to give her a direction. And I actually went into the bedroom following one of her chemo treatments, brought her home and so forth. And I asked her this question. I says, do you want to live or do you want to die? I may not agree with your choice, but I will support you in it. Well, unbeknownst to me, she had already made the choice several weeks earlier. But nonetheless, that to me was the first thing. But one of the thoughts that really came home to me several years later as I'm trying to put this thing together was, if you don't know, and again, I say this all the time on the program, if you don't know that you have these other choices, how can you choose them? I use the analogy of someone walking down a road and the fog is rolled in. We get that a lot here on the West Coast, the marine layer. And you walk this road every day because the elders have told you, stay close, follow the white line, the shoulder, you'll be fine, you'll get to the destination, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one day you're walking this road and suddenly the fog lifts and you see a fork that you never saw before. Now you get to choose. Do I want to go there? I don't know what's down that road. I know what's down this one because I've been down this one 1,000 times. But what if I go off to this off in this direction on this fork? Who knows what could be there? What opportunities could be down there? What other people and experiences? Then that's really what I'm talking about, and that's why I'm such a firm believer in education, in getting people educated. I know there's a lot of dissension in the ranks, as it were, especially when it comes to a lot of these programs that provide support, governmental programs that provide support for people, which I was on in my 20s for only a short time, thank goodness. I was glad it was there, but I didn't want to stay on it because I knew I could do other things. But that's the difference. A lot of folks generationally don't know that. All they know is these entitlement programs.
Yeah.
And until they are given the education to choose something else, choose that other fork, guess what? They and their children and their children's children are going to be on entitlement until the species dies out.
Fair enough.
And so that's why I'm a firm believer that everybody deserves an education.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the same. You and I are not both going to Harvard because I don't think I'd survive.
I probably wouldn't either. Right.
Talk to me about this aspect of education and of choice as well. And again, all stemming around the personalpowermastery.co, which is the website, folks, title of the book, as well as the website, douglasvermeeren.com. Tell us about choice and so forth.
Well, if we're looking about education as well, it's interesting because I guess how far do we want to go into this? Because the history of education, we know that the current education system is actually set up to build people to be factory workers. That's really what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So we're in an outdated system that really, I believe, doesn't empower us. Now, of course, this is mandatory right now. So we don't really have any other alternative, but we've got to participate in that to a certain extent. I found that really... What's a kind and polite way to say this? The truth of the matter is the biggest thing that my education gave me is learning how to interact with other people on a social level. Mm-hmm. Other than that, nothing was useful. Basic math, I get it. Maybe some language. I mean, those things are great, but those could have all been learned in other ways. I didn't need to contribute, that many hours per day to get that information. I could have easily had someone share this with me quite quickly. But where my real learning began, and I believe that all the top achievers in the world, this is where the difference is. It's what you choose to learn after, right? Or even outside of that time. And if we look at everybody from, Mark Zuckerberg to Fred Smith to Bill Gates, they chose outside of the traditional education to really build their life and their business. And that traditional education didn't really give them those tools. And so I guess for me, if I were to identify what I think are, the most powerful educational influences that we have, it's definitely going to be our network and our associations, those that we choose to hang out with, those that we choose to let influence our life, but also those that choose to guide us. And so, I don't know, I mean, maybe the best way to answer this for your listeners is you got to decide what you really want in life. What is it that you value most? And then you need to start hanging out with those people, but with deliberate purpose. So, you've heard this, your network determines your net worth. I've also heard it said that if you hang out with four losers, you become the fifth. Those are all true statements. But I believe even more so, if you want to become successful, you have to deliberately choose those you're going to learn from and spend time with. But you also need to understand ahead of time what you're trying to learn. And, I know earlier in your show, we talked a little bit about every Friday I meet with one of my mentors who's worth about $700 million right now. If I just showed up there and, was there to tell jokes and talk about the weather and the latest sports team, chances are very good he would no longer meet with me. So I need to make sure that when I show up, I have a plan. I also need to make sure that I've got ways that I can valuably contribute to the conversation. And this is where the education comes into play. In fact, one of the things that I do in my industry to stay relevant, in fact, Brian Tracy once said that if you'll read a book every single month that you'll rise to the top 1% of your industry. Well, for those of you who want to follow me on social media, I actually post what I read every single month because we want to talk about it. And I do between 10 and 15 books a month on average. And I'm not talking pamphlets, I'm talking books. So I don't really watch a lot of TV. When I'm on airplanes, I'm reading. I find that, you know, that idea of being highly educated in terms of the conversation of what's taking place in your specific either market or areas of interest, you need to know that so that when you walk in the room, you're the most educated guy on that subject and therefore the most valuable to everyone that's there. If you want to rise, like I said, to high levels of expansion, before you can expand what you have to expand who you are. And I think that's one thing that maybe our society has kind of created is this idea of instant gratification, and I hate to say it, laziness. You know, we'll sit in front of a TV or a computer screen for hours on end, but not really receiving anything in return, right? We're not really being, compensated for our effort there. So I think as we can kind of look at that dynamic, education is essential. I don't know if I've answered your question there, but I hope I've definitely encouraged some people to go get educated.
Well, you actually have. And I think it's really important that, I remember talking with a local professor at the community college here in Santa Barbara, and we were discussing education. And I said to him the very thing I said to you. I said, everybody deserves an education. To which I half expected, a half salient response to that. The response I got, I was shocked. He says, no, not everybody does. Because some people are stupid. And I'm going, from a college professor? Now, if he had said, if you're talking about a formal four-year university education, et cetera, no, because not everybody learns in those environments. There are all different kinds of educations. So I'm kind of in agreement with you from the standpoint that I learned how to run from bullies when I was in school. I got into track and field, so I did very well. Thank you very much. I stayed fit because of grade school and high school. But my education, I feel like sometimes I have a PhD having done this program and produced, I'm going to say, thousands of other programs over the years at different stations with the various guests and subjects that have been discussed. And cool. It's just been incredible. And then I've also seen people, especially hosts of programs, who have gotten their PhD. Following starting their own radio broadcast, and then all of a sudden they go after their PhD, and then I have to call them doctor. And it's just incredible, in my opinion, the opportunities for education, for different types of education that are out there. And I'm with you. Go out there, folks, and learn something. You know, what's that phrase? Always go to bed every night. Knowing that you have learned one new thing, you know?
Yep.
And I would hope that people would, begin the process of doing that. To me, this is fascinating. Again, people, you have, you mentioned something about, you said something earlier, you used that four letter word that is often used and people get real concerned, like, really, it's free? Tell us about the free stuff that we can utilize that can help us, to move off of that stuck spot.
Yeah, well, I guess the first thing that I want to say by this word free, why do I even give the free stuff away? Well, a couple reasons. One, I want you to get a chance to feel and experience what we are. I want you to get results. Like I said, when you become, part of our tribe, you'll do so because you get our vibe. You'll be here because of the results that we share. So let me share with you a couple of the free tools that we do share. And like I said, if you go to my website, there's links to free stuff in all of the five areas we talked about. So in other words, I've got some stuff that will help you with your self-worth, your self-confidence. I've got stuff that will help you in your spirituality. I've got stuff that will help you with your health. I've got stuff especially that will help you with your relationships. And my expertise is always abundance. I really, I'm not pro at all the other stuff. I bring in people to help with a lot of the other stuff and people that can teach on the other stuff. But what I'm really good at is teaching people how to make money. So if you're interested in any of those areas, we've got resources and tools from among the top achievers that can share how you can access whatever it is that you're looking. Like, for example, let me just talk about business growth for a minute, because business is one of the things that I love. I'm actually one of the founding directors of the Entrepreneur Academy. And so we actually bring in some of the world's top business leaders to teach there. Again, people that were among my 400 interviews. So we've had people like Frank McGuire, who is one of the co-founders of Federal Express, former VP of marketing for all of KFC and American Airlines. We've had Marilyn Tam, the former CEO of Nike and Reebok, providing info. We've got Brian Smith, the founder of UGG Boots, sharing stuff there. I mean, we've got some top-notch people. So these guys have given us this, you know, material that is among these free resources. So if you're looking to get to a high level in whatever it is that you're doing, we've got high caliber people who are going to share strategies that actually work. And this is one of the things that I'm a big fan of, is that there are a lot of gurus out there, and I'm not criticizing them, but I'm sharing that a lot of them, I believe, are sharing theory. And that's wonderful, right? Like, there's some great ideas that are among them. Check them out. But what I want you to get is not theory. I want you to get stuff that's going to actually provide for your results and also do it in the quickest time possible. Because let's face it, we've all got an expiry date as humans. There will be one day when we have to leave this earth, and we don't have a lot of time to fiddle around trying to figure things out. We need results. We need them yesterday. And so when I'm sharing the tools that we have through our site, they're things that I know have worked, things that have worked for me and my students, and things that have worked quickly. So again, these are free resources. Come and, you know, try it out. I promise that you'll be very happy with what you receive. And we've got, you know, a Facebook group called Personal Power Mastery where you can find access to that. All you got to do is click join. And, you know, in fact, I just saw somebody do that right now as I'm here on the phone with you. But we've also got, like I said, another one for entrepreneurs called the Entrepreneur Academy, also free through Facebook. And we've got a variety of other groups where you can receive things. In fact, I know that we've got one that's even going up a little bit later on this month called Simple Wealth Formulas. That's the website, simplewealthformulas.com. And it starts with a handful of free videos where you can learn some of the strategies that I personally used to build, you know, seven and eight figure businesses as a very young man. And it's all free. So come and join us. There's really no reason why you wouldn't. We're happy to, you know, give you the info and let you decide for yourself if we're a good fit.
Would you consider yourself both happy and successful?
Well, I personally believe that success, to me, one of my core values is being happy. And so I am totally happy. And I have to admit that, you know, at first as a young man, I thought the happiness was directly attached to finance and abundance. And, you know, to some extent, okay, maybe I'm being smug, because now that I certainly have that, I've sort of checked that off and I can have the freedom and the time to do whatever I want. I mean, you know, everything in life that we approach has a ticket that we need to buy, including your time, right? And so now that I have that, I've got a different degree of freedom. And I think my shift is that my happiness now comes really from the time I get to spend, especially with my grandkids and my wife. And it's kind of funny, you know, people say that money never is happiness, but I love what Bo Derek said once. She said, people who say money isn't happiness just don't know where to shop. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, money isn't happiness, but money is a magnifier of what your true values are. You're going to spend your money on what you value most. So for me, because I value my family most, money has given me the freedom and the opportunity to make choices there. I mean, I don't have to necessarily go into work when I don't want to. I don't have to, you know, sit behind a desk when I don't want to. I don't even have to be in the country. Like right now I'm in Canada and we've just had snow here. I'll be honest with you, we're thinking about, actually my wife and I are taking off on a holiday in a couple of weeks, and we're probably going to bring the grandkids with us. So what I'm saying is money gives us those choices to create experiences and memories. That's really where our happiness lies and what we're able to do, not really in terms of what we're able to accumulate, but what we accumulate does affect what we're able to do. And for those that think that there's, you know, how should we say, an incorrect view of that. Well, you were talking biblically before where it says the love of money is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true. We can trace all the evil to the love of money. Now, I want to share again, the love of money is what we're talking about. But what Paul didn't say there is we can also trace a lot of good things to the accumulation of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see that, you know, even a church building is not built for free. right? I love what Jim Rohn says is you can't give from an empty piggy bank, right? So we've got to be very careful to think that money is the root of all evil. It's not. And also that there's a lot of good things that have their root in money as well, right?
Yeah.
And so we've got to recognize that, you know, when we're looking at a scripture like that, you know, we've got to be careful that we don't interpret it against our own success,
yeah.
right? Because again, Jesus wanted us to be abundant, and naturally, you know, I mean, let's just put it this way: as children of God, if God created all the abundance and wealth on the earth, wouldn't you think that this is what Zig Ziglar said? He says, "Wouldn't you want, or wouldn't you think he would want his children to have it more than Satan's kids?"
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's be willing to accept that and yeah. recognize that there's a lot of good that's done with money as well. Money yeah. is a magnifier. It reflects who you already are. If you're going to be a jerk and you're going to create problems with money, money just helps you do it quicker.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a great person, you're going to bless the lives of those around you, and you're going to lift others, and you're going to, you know, help people and everything else. Money gives you more power to do that. Money basically is a great expander. It expands whatever mission you're on, and you get to make that choice.
Before we wrap up, I would like to have you address, I'm going to say the mindset of, and these would be the words from the mindset, that the one percenters, they've got so much of the money and I'm just barely making it and it's not fair, and that I should be given this, that, or the other thing, or I've worked so hard and I've given myself to this company or that company or what have you, and I'm now in my 60s or 50s or whatever, and I should be a heck of a lot farther along, and it's... there's something wrong here. There's an inequity in the system, you know, and capitalism and free enterprise is not fair. And on, and well, I could continue, but I'm not going to, because I would like to have you speak to that mindset to help that mindset to make the shift.
Well, here's the deal, is life actually is fair. And the reason why those people are saying these kinds of things is because they're giving away all their power. In other words, it's the system's fault. It's, you know, the fact that I've been an employee my whole life, and it's that fault and everything else. Here's the deal. When it comes to personal power mastery, which is the name of the book, we have a saying: if you own it, you can change it. And until you make something personal and actually get personally involved, you'll never change anything. And again, after interviewing more than 400 of the world's top achievers, one of the most common things that we have seen again and again and again and again is that as soon as you get personally involved, you will see some things change. And you've got to stop giving away your power. You know, we talk about being proactive versus reactive. You know, people who are reactive are broke. They're always blaming the outside sources for whatever circumstances they're in. Those that are proactive understand that they have power to create their circumstances. And they recognize that it's within their power to do so. And they get, like I said, people, knowledge, opportunity, and geography, all these things to help them and support them. Once they know what they want, they don't take no for an answer. And what I mean is they don't force people to do their will. They actually first start by confronting themselves. You know, one of the funniest things that I have as an ongoing project is I actually record every single excuse that I've ever heard. Okay, so I actually have a list, and it's probably close to about 7 or 8 pages fully written in columns of all the excuses I've ever heard somebody make in their life. And I share this with my students because I ask them to go and find words or phrases that they've used on here and circle it. And if you can find it on the list, you're obviously in the wrong. And this is it, is we give our power away and we doubt ourselves and we think that, you know, what's happening is just destined to be. Well, that's never ever going to work. And I wish we had more time, because there's something brilliant that we do share in Personal Power Mastery, not only in the book, but in the live seminar. It's called The Continuum of Willingness. And here's the deal. Just to explain really quickly, imagine, if you will, a line. And at one end of the continuum, it's the negative line. It's the people that are reactive. It's the people that have very little willingness to either participate in their own life or participate in opportunities as they come along. You've seen them. They're people who you ask them to do something, and sometimes it's like pulling teeth to get them to, let's just even say, to get out of bed, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to threaten them. You've got to argue with them. You've got to pull them. You've got to sometimes, you know, throw water on them. You've got to do whatever it is to get them out of bed. Well, the problem is they approach so many of the opportunities in life that way, with a super low degree of willingness. And at that end of the spectrum, that's where there's the least amount of money, the least amount of opportunity, the least amount of freedom, the least amount of, just consider them slaves to everything that comes around. On the other end of the spectrum, there's a high degree of willingness. And of course, as a continuum, there's various degrees all the way. So, I mean, with some activities in your life, you might be begrudging. Others, you might be enthusiastic, right? We'll talk more about that another time. But at that far end of the spectrum is where all the money, opportunity, resources, freedom, everything is. All good things are at the other end. Now, if we look at it, you know, you could say, here's somebody who's willing to get involved, but there's an even higher level. And that's somebody who, when they are involved, they do a high, high level of work. It's a high quality. If you've been in a work situation, you know there's people that can be trusted always with a task that it's going to be done well. Well, that's a high level of willingness, right? Mm. They don't shortcut an opportunity. But there's an even higher degree, and that's people who, even when the job is done, they continue to go the extra mile. They do more than what's asked of them and anticipated. That's a high degree of willingness, and those people are compensated according to that. In fact, if you ever want a promotion in your work, solve more problems than you own. So in other words, you start solving problems of those around you, eventually you're going to be the manager of those people, right? Now, there's an even higher degree, and that's what I call the pre-extra mile. That's people who can anticipate what the needs are even before they're expressed. And for your listeners there, you want to try and experiment, especially for you that are out there in a couple and you're married. Husbands, try this. Go and either clean the floor or do the dishes or do the laundry without being asked, and watch what happens to your wife. Right? Anticipate that. Do the pre-extra mile before it's even expressed, and you'll see what your rewards are. Because when people who can do that pre-extra mile, that's where all the money, the opportunity, their time is. People who can anticipate what the society and what the relationships they have need before those people express it, those are the most valuable people. And so I guess long and short, to kind of finish this as a last thought, why are some people broke and why are some people abundant? It's because they have different degrees of willingness, different degrees of proactiveness, different degrees of responsiveness. And when you internalize and take ownership of things, you can do something about it. When you give that power away and say it's an external force or someone else that's creating these, you've given all possibility for change away. You need to take it personal, and you need to do more than is anticipated. And you need to do it before you can, you know, receive the request. And the more you can do that, the more abundance is going to show up in your life. It's a guaranteed law of the universe. It's the law of the harvest, right?
Absolutely. I have to say, when you mentioned Zig Ziglar, it brought back wonderful, fond memories. He was actually one of the programmers who was on this religious station back in the mid-late 80s that I used to put the tapes on. And back then, they were tapes. They were reel-to-reels and cassettes.
That's hilarious.
And now it's all on-demand podcasts. And I thank you for sharing that. That was very cool. And, you know, one of these days, you know, you might, you know, try to come out of your shell just a little bit more, you know, and share with us some really important stuff that people can really use. This has been great. I have to tell you, I am excited about what you've had to share. Doug Vermeeren, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing with us about personal power mastery and your the work that you're doing. It was interesting, too, that you interviewed these 400 people. They were highly successful. That didn't necessarily mean that they were necessarily all millionaires or billionaires per se, although probably that was the case, because they were using these principles that you've been talking about in the program.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, I want to be one of them. I want to be one of them. By the way, does going that extra mile for someone, is it okay that I go the extra mile, even though I might say, here we go again, they're asking for this, and I shouldn't have said yes, I would do that, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's just who I am. I always give them a little bit more. Or you just go into it with that total willingness, because otherwise you sort of sabotage your own efforts.
Well, I think that's a great question. And, you know, oh my goodness, if we had time to go through this.
Yeah, we'll have you back. You know what? We'll have you back.
I'd love to. We've got to be aware that there are also takers in the world, people who are, I call them bottomless pits. No matter how much you give, they're still there with their hand out.
Absolutely.
And so it's got to be what I consider also a fair exchange of value, which doesn't always mean you're getting paid for it, but it means that there's an appreciation that grows.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that we give with expectation, because that's not what this is.
Right.
But we do understand what we're getting into, and we also need to establish boundaries so that we ourselves are protected.
Right.
And so I guess, let me maybe put it this way. One of the studies that we conducted tried to explore, where does all human emotional challenge come from? Like frustrations, like anger, sadness, hurt, embarrassment, feelings of inadequacy. Where do all these human negative emotions come? Sadness, right?
Yeah.
And where they all come from is one place, and that's unmet expectations.
Mm.
You see, when we have an expectation that someone's going to perform a certain way and then they don't, we become angry. Like if I told my wife I'm going to take out the garbage and she comes downstairs and sees that the garbage is there, I'm in trouble, right? And so one of the things that I think is important in going the extra mile is that we have correct expectations and that we manage expectations. And so when someone is asking for our help, if we cannot provide it, it's appropriate that we share that we have a boundary there and maybe even explain why.
There you
or
go.
What we feel needs to happen in order for that to be met.
That's and, good point. Well, I hate to do it, but I have to cut you off there. DougVermeeren.com is the website, as well as personalpowermastery.co. And again, I thank you so much. And by the way, should you be on vacation and down here on the central coast of Santa Barbara, love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because obviously there is just so much more that we can share with our listeners.
That's perfect. Thank you.
And then I have three final quick questions for you. And thank you so much. First of all, who is Doug Vermeeren?
Wow, that's a great question. Who is Doug Vermeeren? Well, I guess the first thing is a husband, father, and grandfather. And other than that, I love to serve. And so I guess a servant would be an appropriate title. And one of the things that allows me to be a servant is I'm also a constant learner.
Mm.
And so I'm always on the lookout for ways to improve my life and the lives of those that we're connected to. So, I guess that's the easiest way to explain it.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Wow, that's a great question. I think probably my greatest satisfaction comes in seeing those that I serve succeed. We've had a very high level of success in my own personal life. I enjoy what I do and the time that I have to do. And so now I'm really, you know, my sense of fulfillment, my sense of expansion comes as I can help others. What do they say? One time someone asked a great prophet about the principle of self-aggrandizement. And they said, well, is it good for someone to lift themselves up in the world? And this prophet, rather than saying that it was good or that it was bad, simply said it is a true principle. And the audience was confused. And they said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, it happens. As I lift others, or as good people lift others, they can't help but being lifted in the process.
Mm.
And so I think for me, one of the things that expands my mission and allows me to expand kind of my mission is the more people I help, the more I get to help. And so that's kind of the direction that we've taken.
Mm.
And so I find that fulfilling. Like as my tribe grows and they experience success, I feel fulfilled.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose, I think that kind of overlaps the last question a little bit. And that's really, I guess, first of all, if we start close to home, that would have to do with my family and those that are here. I really want to leave a legacy that my kids and my grandkids can not only feel proud of, but one that they can use the tools that I've created to expand their own lives for generations to come among my own family. But that also now brings up a definition. What is family? Those that have attended our events and have had a chance to be with us know that we're very different than many of the seminar groups and companies out there. Sometimes you might experience this sort of one-shot wonder where you come in, get a training, and then you're kicked to the curb. We don't do that. In fact, anybody that comes into our fold and our tribe, generally we build a 5 to 10 year plan from them right from the get-go, and they literally become like family. And so our family, there's blood family, and then there's also those that have, how should we say, a commonality, or they believe in our ideology, the things that we share, they literally become like family too. And I use that word tribe with that definition in mind. Our students really are people we care about, and we want to see them succeed, and we want to help them pass these things even on to their own immediates. And that's how I measure success. I mean, we grow our family.
Yeah. Douglas, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And I encourage people to go to douglasvermeeren.com as well as personalpowermastery.co. And again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And also, if you are listening to the radio broadcast, you better go to the website, to the podcast, because there's a whole lot more that you'll miss if you don't. Until next time, love, Talal.